If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Angela Wright. She's a former employee of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas when he was head of the EEOC. And as you know, you were fired from the agency. And when we spoke with Clarence Thomas's good friend Armstrong Williams last week about the memoir, in which you are not mentioned, Armstrong Williams says that you were bitter about being fired. Was that the impetus for your allegations against him?
No, that was not the impetus for the allegations. Obviously, I don't think anybody would feel good about being fired, and at the time, I was not happy with it because it was totally unjustified firing. It was a political firing. But that being said, years later, I mean, Clarence Thomas had given me a glowing recommendation to get the job at the Charlotte Observer. Clarence Thomas, that is one of the points that I want people to totally understand, that he perjured himself onto the Supreme Court. He said that I'd been fired because he heard that I'd called somebody on his staff the F word.
The F word being a slur directed against homosexuals. This was his testimony during the hearings.
That was his testimony during the hearing. That was an absolute lie. Nothing that even remotely resembled that ever took place between me and Clarence Thomas. You know, it's a longer story about what actually happened, but ultimately, you know, what happened was there was a commissioner who wanted my position for her person, and the entire situation was orchestrated so that I was relieved of that position. But when Clarence Thomas said during the judiciary hearings that he fired me for that, it was in direct contrast to what he told the Charlotte Observer when they talked to him about hiring me. His reference for me said that I did a great job, that I just sort of got caught up in office reshuffling that he wanted done, and that, in fact, he said, I owe her an apology. These were notes that were taken by Mary Newsom from the Charlotte Observer, who repeated them at the time when they were called.
What did he tell you at the time? What did he tell you at the time about why you were being fired?
We had had a news conference. He was having a lot of bad press. I was asked by Commissioner Ricky Silberman to organize this news conference. I organized a news conference. It was a very successful news conference. He got lots of wonderful press coverage. And it was a really good week. And I'd come into my office one day, and there was this letter in my chair. And when I opened the letter, it simply said, your services are no longer needed. And I walked into my office, and people were looking, you know, really strange, like I know something you don't know. And it was a surprise to me. So I walked up to his office. His secretary, Diane Holt, just told me, go on in. She didn't even stop to ask me what I wanted. She apparently knew. And when I walked into his office, he was in his bathroom in his office. I sat down at a chair at his desk. When he came out of the bathroom, he looked a little, you know, surprised to see me. But then he walked over, and I held up the letter, and I said, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, what is this all about? He said, well, Angela, I tell you, I told you to fire all those people down there, and you haven't fired all of them. And I said to him, you know, these are career federal employees. You can't just go in and fire them. I was engaged in trying to help reorganize it, you know, but I can't just go fire these people. And he says, well, you know, truth is, I've just never been happy with your work. And I said, how can you say that? Why are you just telling me that now? And it's particularly on this day, because he had a stack of very positive news clippings that my staff had provided to him. And he said, I don't care anything about your news media relations. He said, I never needed you to get positive coverage. If I needed positive coverage, all I had to do is call my buddy Juan Williams over at the Charlotte. Over at the Washington Post.
Juan Williams was, of course, a colleague of ours here at NPR.
And that's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just said to him, well, okay, you know, I've been nothing but loyal to you. If you wanted me to leave, if you wanted my position, why didn't you just tell me it was time for me to move on so that I could seek something else?
Angela, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, we need to take a short break, but we'll return with more with you in a couple of minutes. Angela, right at the time we took our break, you were telling us that you were describing that at the time you were fired by Clarence Thomas, he told you that he just thought you were ineffective in your position, if you just finished the thought you were making.
Yeah, it was just really a thought to demonstrate a certain level of character. When I said to him I thought that he could have given me the opportunity to move because it was clear to me that it was a political move. He said, I said, I was your friend. I was loyal. I tried to support you. And he just said to me, I don't care anything about friends or loyalty.
Were
and
you,
at that were, point, I said, okay, fine.
But did you consider yourself friends?
I considered myself a supporter of his. There were times, yeah, when we talked as friends, when I guess friends in that, did we hang out together? We had organized together along with several other Black Republicans on Capitol Hill, the Black Republican Congressional Staff Association. So
you were Republican
it wasn't like
then?
I knew him.
You were
I was a Republican,
then.
So, mm-hmm. And there was a, you know, there was a small group of us. So, yeah, I guess we all at some point could say we were friends.
Now, Justice Thomas suggests then and now that there was a conspiracy to derail his nomination, that there were people who just did not like his politics. And he suggests then and now that Anita Hill was part of that conspiracy. You aren't named in the book. You aren't mentioned in his memoir at all. But do you give any credence to that perspective?
None at all. I think that if there was a conspiracy, the conspiracy was on the opposite side. There was a conspiracy to make sure he got to the Supreme Court at all costs. I think that Anita Hill, clearly, in the beginning, she didn't even give her name. I think that Anita Hill simply wanted to provide the FBI and the Senate Judiciary Committee with information that they should, she thought they should consider before deciding whether this was the man they wanted to put on the Supreme Court. And if you read the book Strange Justice, you know, it talks about this major political machine that the White House put in place. I think it's important for people to understand that this was, really was not Anita Hill versus Clarence Thomas. It was Anita Hill versus the White House, Bush White House political machine, of which many, if not all, of the Republicans on the Judiciary Committee were a part of it. And it was Angela Wright, you know, trying to go up against that machine also.
What was that like for you when you became a public, your name became public, and that you were called to testify? What was that like?
Oh, it was terrifying. But, you know, all of a sudden I have people quoted like Senator Orrin Hatch, who'd never met me, saying things like he was going to hand me my ASS on a silver platter. There were people who were, you know, calling my home. When I got on the plane, there was this man following me on the plane and being rather confrontational.
What do you mean confrontational? Saying things to you, like challenging you?
Well, when I got on the plane, this one man, you know, because it was big news, several people knew who I was when I got to the airport. This one man just walked. I took a seat. I was in coach. He just walked up to my row and just stood there and staring at me and glaring at me, you know, it made me very uncomfortable. He wouldn't move. And the flight attendant, one of the flight attendants recognized it, and she came up. She asked him to take a seat, and she moved me to first class. It was in a very awkward because, you know, I was also a member of a newspaper. I was in the business, and so by virtue of becoming part of the story, my newspaper, the Charlotte Observer, by extension, became part of the story. Yet here I was, and being ferreted away from the what is now the Reagan National Airport in a car, running from the media, and then getting to the office with my attorneys, and sort of it was like being held prisoner while people flogged me and not being able to defend myself because.
I wanted to ask you, we only have about a minute and a half left. I know that you read the memoir. You read it after we contacted you. And I mentioned you aren't in the book. I don't know how you feel about that. But I just wondered if you had any reaction to Clarence Thomas's memoir. Is there anything that you learned from the book that changed perhaps the way you view him or what happened between you?
Well, no. I always knew him to be a mean-spirited, nasty, you know, fairly unstable person. It was enlightening to read his account of his childhood because that did put it in perspective. I actually, my heart went out to the young child Clarence once I understood, you know, he was a child whose father was absent, whose mother sent him away, who was raised by an unemotional grandfather. I finally understood where all his anger and mean-spiritedness came from. I knew it was there. And also his self-loathing and his hatred for anything black or civil rights oriented or affirmative action.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry, Angela. Those are some fairly strong words that you're using. So I do have to ask him, what is the basis for your saying that, that you feel that there's self-loathing there? And I know we don't have we only have a couple of minutes left, but
I know. Well, I mean, as his director of public affairs, I sat in his staff meetings while he made jokes about Pickaninny dolls, and he did it for the entertainment of white people. And he teased some other white staffer who was having some trouble getting a loan or something, saying, "You're just not black enough. You need to get black. Wear a dashiki and pump your fist, and then you can get all the money you want." So it was that kind of thing. He always took a special effort to denigrate anything about black people, about civil rights, affirmative action. And that, to me, is self-loathing.
So finally, Angela, I feel I need to emphasize for the sake of, and we only have time for a yes or no answer, do you stand by the testimony that you gave, or rather the interview that you gave 16 years ago to the Senate Judiciary Committee saying that, Thomas made these inappropriate comments to you? Do you stand by those comments?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much. Angela Wright is the former director of public affairs at the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me.